This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us.
He was trying to brand us. So we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
Join my host as they unravel the story of the largest and most shocking organization in the history of the troubled teen industry. Listen to season two of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, I'm Jackie Goldschneider.
I'm Jen Fessler.
And we are two Jersey Jays, and we have pretty juicy episode for you today.
I think that it's like the episode in my mind is like one that I would want to talk about or hear about. I'd want to listen to this episode because I think it's there's so much to say about it. We're talking about money.
Yes, we're talking about money. And since we are in the Housewives world, we're going to start there.
Yeah.
So I think that the Housewives have become synonymous with having a lot of money, but I don't think that that's actually so true.
I think that part of the appeal of the Housewives, and as a viewer, I think I felt this way too, is watching women who, you know, supposedly had it all. A lot of that had to do with money, but also looks and, you know, the perfect husbands and children, blah, blah, blah. And then sort of watching their demise, because I think we are so caught up in, as a culture, money. And there's so much that affects us in terms of like our own self-worth in terms of money.
Yeah.
So I almost feel like the Housewives show that money doesn't buy happiness.
Yes, but I originally thought that like all the Housewives had a lot of money, and that is just absolutely not the case. And what I have found in recent years is that people who look like they have a ton of money, a lot of times it's just a lot of spending of money that people don't necessarily have. Now, listen, there are people on these shows that legit have a ton of money, and I have no privy to anyone's bank account, so I'm just guessing. But if I had to guess, I would say that it's definitely like Lisa Vanderpump, definitely rich. Kyle, rich.
Right.
Sunstrack, rich.
Right. Candy, yes, of course.
Yes.
And then there are those of us who are not, you know, flying our own private jets and are, I think, comfortable with that and represent ourselves accurately. And I think there are those that try to fake it. And
yeah, I mean, well, for documented news stories about many people. And I'll tell you who I just, in my head, it's so crazy to me that they don't have much money, was this whole thing with Croy and Kim. Now, I didn't watch Atlanta when she was on it. I actually, there's a few Housewives shows I don't watch. Atlanta's one of them. So I don't really know the people on there, but I know that Kim was on Atlanta Housewives for what, 5 seasons? And then she had her own show for, I think, 8 seasons. He was an
party for the party.
Yes.
Cutest
name. Did you watch that?
I watched a little bit of it, and I definitely watched when Kim was on it and she was involved with that older guy. They called him
Big Daddy.
Big Daddy.
Big Daddy.
Or yeah. Something. And I mean, that's an interesting study right there. Right.
I mean, she had an NFL contract
that
paid him
like
billions of dollars also. And I mean, they're broke. She's selling her wigs on eBay.
Yeah.
So how do you go from all that income?
Isn't it interesting? It's the thing potentially, I don't know, that brought her so much money was representing herself as a rich woman, right? And that's the thing that is part of what made her so interesting, watching her in the biggest state, watching her dripping in diamonds. And so to keep that up, I'm not their financial advisor, but I guess she put forth too much effort in terms of like showing and being showy. And then she didn't have anything to back it up, or it all went away because she was so busy showing off her wealth.
I don't know. I think a lot of people think that being on the show itself is going to bring you the kind of money that you're presenting, which you don't really have, right? So, but that really doesn't happen. Like, it's very rare, I think, to make enough money on this show that you can catch up to what you're presenting. Do you get what I'm saying?
And why? And the bigger picture, right? Like, why does it matter so much?
Right. Why does it matter? Well, I think it used to matter a lot more than it does now. I think it used to be that housewives were synonymous with having a lot of money. Maybe not like billion, like not sudden money, but like living in a really big house, driving your Range Rover, you know, occasionally flying on a private jet. Now, I think it's different.
It is different now. It definitely has changed. Having said that, I also see a lot of the housewives representing themselves as down to earth, relatable. I don't have as much money as you guys do. And the women that are doing that have still beautiful lives. They may not live in estates with yachts and private jets, but they live in beautiful homes. They have enough. They have enough to, you know, dress themselves up. And yet there's this whole, I feel like even just recently with Salt Lake City, that whole piece of it that, you know, Monica didn't like whatever was happening with the ring. You saw it. Right. She was, that rubbed her the wrong way. And she had to buy a Louis bag or something so that she didn't feel inferior when they all went on trip. But this whole sort of, and that people could relate to that. Right. But Monica still, I don't know Monica. I don't know what she has in her bank, but she still lives. It looks to me like a really nice life. She has four kids. There's food on the table. She seems to take very good care of herself. She's driving around in a Range Rover. So, you know, that sort of feeling that maybe if I have less, that makes me more authentic and relatable. And I don't think that's true either.
Yeah, I don't think that's true either. But I will tell you, I think that people love seeing a downfall. I mean, it's part of the whole like cancel culture. But like when Erin got sued, I'm not taking a side on who's telling the truth in this one. But when Erin got sued, Erin from New York, by her landlord for unpaid rent. And it was all over the news. I think people love that kind of stuff. That kind of, ooh, maybe she's not who she says she is.
Yeah.
Whenever there's a story about Dorit in the news, whenever there's a story about Erica Jane in the news.
Well, that's because I think that it's natural for us. Unfortunately, part of what makes a human is sometimes feelings of jealousy, feelings of wanting more, not being content. Comparing yourself to others. I think that is, you know, something I try to fight against it, but it's also, I do the same thing, right? Like I can look at a woman who is so uber wealthy, like a Dorit or a Kyle Richards, and say to myself, you know, wow, you know, I'd like my own jet. I'd like my own yacht. And the truth is I am blessed above and beyond. I have everything I need. My kids have food on the table. You know, God forbid someone gets sick in my family, I'll have enough money to fly them to wherever the best hospital is. That's what counts, right? Money doesn't buy happiness, but yet still we covet these things. And whether it's right or wrong, I think everyone has like a certain degree of that, right? And it's hard to fight against it, but specifically with the housewives, it's so showy. Everybody is trying so hard to show so much.
Yes, right? On our cast included, but we won't go into detail on that. So I think that also, you know, we live in towns where money is everywhere and 100%. People like to show off. I mean, New Jersey, people like their big cars and their big lives and they like to live large. And so it's hard to separate yourself from it. It's not just Housewives world. It's suburbs. It's in the cities. It's everywhere.
I grew up in sort of a unique financial situation. My parents were divorced when I was like 3. And I moved with my mom and my sister to Sugar Land, Texas. My mother was a secretary. Now we would say assistant. And we just didn't have a lot. We lived in a very small house. I remember, you know, kids in junior high lived in Sugar Creek. And I would go through these gates and see these homes. And I would just, you know, feel less than. And my dad at the time in the 80s was very, very wealthy. So I would fly to see him and he was literally his apartment was across from the Met, 1010 Fifth Avenue in the city. And then he had a an estate in Bedford. And eventually he ended up living in Trump Tower for a while. And when I was about 19, we had a B'nai Mitzvah. So I hadn't been bat mitzvah. It was myself and my sister and my half-brother. Anyway, it was on the Queen Elizabeth. It was like on the front page of the Metropolitan section. And Ivan Boesky like flew a private jet onto the ship. It was over the top, right? And then my father didn't have money. But my point is, it was always sort of that back and forth. And that sort of, I don't know, I used to have so much financial insecurity. Like, you know, I'd wake up sometimes in my 20s and be afraid, like I have these nightmares about like being under the bridge with nowhere to live. And, you know, being homeless or just struggling. And I don't know, part of why I think I'm so grateful that we have what we have now. And again, we're not bazillionaires, but it's just the safety that comes with having money.
Yeah. I have a weird relationship with money. I've always had a weird relationship with money. And I think it also stems from my childhood. So when I first got on the show, I was really uncomfortable showing off my wealth. I didn't want the producers to know that I had money. I just wanted to seem like I was like regular suburban well off, right? I drove a minivan at the time. It wasn't even a new minivan. And it was like very stereotypical, like goldfish on the floor, shit everywhere, bird poop on the windows. And, you know, my house is beautiful, but it's not. And it's, my house is beautiful, but it's not like, you know, a ridiculous house. Right. So, I think that my second season, when I took the ladies to my Hamptons house, which is quite a beach house.
Yeah.
They were like, wait, what? Because everyone assumed that I was like the poor one on the cast. Right. And they were like, does Jackie have money? I remember I was listening to another podcast and they said that they think that I was like the first housewives ever to pretend that I had less money than I actually have, which was really funny. But I grew up with a really weird relationship with money because I grew up, the first part of my childhood was in Staten Island, New York, which was very, very, we were very middle class. We had like a small home. And, you know, like we just didn't have a ton of money. Like me and my friends, like we would play in our garages. And then my parents, their businesses really took off and they wanted to move out of Staten Island. So they bought a McMansion in New Jersey. And it was one of the first homes on in the new development in this new area of the town. And we were like the only house on the block. And I was really isolated. My parents, who are wonderful people, but they dropped me off at this house and they were like, okay, we're going to work full time. And I had no friends. I had no rides to go anywhere. And I moved to this McMansion and I was very isolated. I was very lonely. I had no friends. I would have a new school. Money essentially, suddenly we were wealthy and I was so miserable, whereas I was so happy in Staten Island.
Is that interesting?
And I was so miserable.
Yeah, and friends and laughing. And
yes,
as a kid, that's everything. You don't give a shit about everything. How big the house is.
And I think I resented all the money. And then to pile on top of that, my parents continued to make a lot of money. And when I was in college, one day the IRS came in and raided my mother's business and shut everything down. And then I had to watch my parents go to trial for tax evasion and wonder how much jail time they were going to get and watch them get sentenced. And it was horrific.
Yeah, you're screwed.
So I think that I felt like when I didn't have the money, I was so much happier.
Safer?
I was just happier.
Yeah,
and then when I had all the money, nothing about it brought me happiness. So I was always very, very scared.
Nobody likes getting sick. You know your body and you know it's happening. You wake up with a sore throat and low-grade fever. Ugh.
So what are your choices? Get sicker and miss work? Then hope to see a doctor this week or head to an urgent care? Wait 2 hours and sit in a room full of sick people?
Nope, not me. I have a smarter option, my medical emergency kit.
When you get your own medical emergency kit, you just match your symptoms to the doctor-recommended prescription in your kit. No waiting to see the doctor. You get well faster. This is not a first aid kit. It's like having an urgent care in your home.
It includes doctor-prescribed meds to treat over 39 medical issues like COVID, strep throat, pneumonia, all kinds of infections, including UTIs, and many more. Plus a doctor's guide so you'll know exactly which med to take and how.
Every home should have at least one medical emergency kit. You can order yours online in minutes, and your kit will be rushed to your door.
And for Jersey J's listeners, we've got a special offer for you. Get 15% off at twc.health/jersey and use promo code Jersey. That's promo code Jersey at twc.health/jersey.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible, cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs in Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to tell you something really, really interesting. So I never would spend money, right? And I had this thing where I would always hold on to money and I never wanted to spend it on anything. And so a few years ago, I don't know if you guys followed my story, my personal story, or read my book, The Weight of Beautiful, but I recovered from a 20-year really severe anorexia. I recovered about 2.5 years ago. I chose to recover. And when I first went into therapy, my therapist, I didn't want to do so many sessions because I didn't want to spend all that money on therapy. It was all part of me hanging on to all my money. So she said to me, you know, if you can't afford it, we can, you know, work out a payment plan. And I said, no, I can afford it.
You just don't want
to. I just didn't want to spend the money. And she opened my eyes to the most interesting fucking thing. It's called, and it's a legit thing. It's called financial anorexia. And it's the same way that you think about food, like when you're anorexic or any kind of dieting, like I was hoarding my calories. So like I wouldn't eat all day. And then at night I would have enough to make me not feel super hungry anymore. And I was always like saving calories and I wouldn't eat. And like I was just afraid to eat because I was afraid it would spiral. And I was the same way with money. I was afraid to let go of any of my money because I was so afraid that something bad would happen.
I think that's how, I don't know that he has financial anorexia, but I think for a lot of people, like my husband, like Jeff, he works so hard and he is successful. And yet if it were up to him, we would spend nothing because I don't think it's about, I really sort of hate this part because it's, I feel like Jews are always labeled when it comes to money, right? Yeah. And Jeff Fessler's not cheap. He would spend everything on his kids in 2 seconds. But like the little things he gets concerned about. And I think that's about financial insecurity. It's, you know, I think that he's, for whatever reason, whatever background he comes from, he's always scared of running out, right? Or like, what's going to happen if I don't have enough, especially as the primary breadwinner. I think a lot of men, you know, identify also with how much money that they make. That's maybe for another day.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people have fear when it comes to money. And then there are those, by the way, who I think, you know, have so much, there's so much excess and feel good. The more they have, the better they feel about themselves, right?
I don't know. I think you're projecting that. I don't know. Do you think that's true? Like, there are people in the Housewives world that definitely keep accumulating and accumulating. There are people on our cast that have 15 cars lined up in front of their house. I don't know. Could that possibly make someone happy?
No, wait. Believe me, I think that everything that people say, right? It's so cliche that money doesn't buy happiness. 100%. I do not think it buys happiness. I think that though people are sometimes their esteem is fed by things.
Yes,
and,
I do.
And it's never lasting. It can't last. Like when I moved into this house, we were bidding on this house and I walked into it and I thought, if we get this house, for whatever reason, I just loved it. I still do. I will never have an unhappy day. Well, about 3 days into owning this house, something came up. I mean, I don't even remember what it was, but I'm just saying that's not realistic. Things, of course, and we know this, right? Things don't make us happy.
Right.
But having said that, things, especially in today's day, and especially, yes, in the world of housewives, have become so important. I always say to myself, when I'm watching Beverly Hills, there's like the Birkin bag is like the 8th housewife. I don't know how many housewives there are, right? It should have, right? It's like, well, it's like a friend of a housewife. It shouldn't hold a diamond, but it has like its own importance, right?
I may argue that the friends of the housewives are the most important part.
Fair enough. But like, I feel like the Birkin bag is really like the 8th Beverly Hills housewife. And like, you know who has one, you know, like they'll do a shot of one, then they'll put $100,000 underneath. Or Garcelle got one, but she got maybe a used one and we know how much that cost. And it's all about, you know, when the new ones come in and it's an interesting thing, right? Like Birkin bag can cost $100,000. Is that okay? I don't know. You could feed a small country with that, but guess what? I have excess. There's somebody else who I listen to on TikTok who talks about like the Kardashians and how bad it is for girls today to watch their lives because they live with so much excess and it's so obnoxious and so bad. They're such a bad example, but yet that person has so much. There's so much excess in her own life, right?
Yeah.
So
I know who you're talking about. You guys.
Person will remain nameless, but
Jim doesn't like to say her name.
No, I don't like to say anyone's name. Okay. I really don't. It's not, okay. You guys know what I'm talking about. You don't have to name people, but the point is that like, you know, when is excess okay and when is it not? I don't know the answer to that.
Like, we have to be okay with the shit we see on social media because nobody has to live their lives for our approval. So we all have to be okay with it. I just, you know, I think that there's a lot of smoke and mirrors. There's a lot of people who are presenting a life that they don't really live. Sad.
I think that some of my happiest friends, and who knows, I don't know how to measure that, but like some of my friends that seem at least to me so content are the ones who maybe could live larger, but they live smaller lives by choice, right? Like they don't have anything to prove. And they have other, whatever it is that brings them happiness, you know, it's not about their money. And that's what I strive for. I get caught up in also this world of trying to prove that, you know, I'm glamorous too.
Yeah.
And I mean, it doesn't work.
My town's a tough town. How is your town? Like my town, the people are great, but they live very large. Like in the summer when everyone's kids go off to sleepaway camp, they are on yachts in Capri. They are at their like massive Southampton homes. They are just living
in my town. But my friends, no. We were in my backyard getting wasted about an hour later.
Yeah. So, you know what else also, like I grew up, this is, I guess, tied to like finances. I grew up, my dad gambled a lot. So every single weekend we'd be at a casino. So I lived at casinos and very curiously, my dad taught me how to gamble. Like, he taught me every single detail about craps when I was probably like 12 years old. Mm-hmm. So I knew craps inside and out. And by the time I was 18, we used to go to the islands and I would be gambling. I was gambling when I was like 15. I had fake ID. And so I think that I developed this relationship with casinos. You saw me even during BravoCon. Like, I do not want to gamble because there was so much, like, always tension between my parents when my dad would lose. And it's so funny. He would bet on sports also. And when I was a kid, my dad, I always thought if there was a broom outside my parents' room, it meant they were getting along. And I never understood what it meant. But my dad would put a broom outside their bedroom when he swept his games. And I only knew that it meant that my parents were getting along.
Wow.
Yeah, they were like the money took over everything. It was crazy.
I love gambling. I love playing, and not like blackjack. I can't keep up with that shit, but like Wheel of Fortune, like sitting there, because there's this feeling, right? That like this quarter, it changed my life. Yeah. And I mean, why do I want to change my life? I have healthy children. And I have food on the table, but it's that sort of feeling. And then, of course, when I always do lose my money, and then it's like the depression of that, right? But it's like such a high to
yeah.
me to like
yeah.
put the quarter in that little slot and think, what? Right. All of a sudden now, like, what if?
Jen's
what
if? What if? Rich.
I'm going to be rich.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Nobody likes getting sick. You know your body and you know it's happening. You wake up with a sore throat and low-grade fever. Ugh.
So what are your choices? Get sicker and miss work? Then hope to see a doctor this week or head to an urgent care? Wait 2 hours and sit in a room full of sick people?
Nope, not me. I have a smarter option, my medical emergency kit.
When you get your own medical emergency kit, you just match your symptoms to the doctor-recommended prescription in your kit. No waiting to see the doctor. You get well faster. This is not a first aid kit. It's like having an urgent care in your home.
It includes doctor-prescribed meds to treat over 39 medical issues like COVID, strep throat, pneumonia, all kinds of infections, including UTIs, and many more. Plus a doctor's guide so you'll know exactly which med to take and how.
Every home should have at least one medical emergency kit. You can order yours online in minutes and your kit will be rushed to your door.
And for Jersey J's listeners, we've got a special offer for you. Get 15% off at twc.health/jersey and use promo code Jersey. That's promo code Jersey at twc.health/jersey.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible, cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs in Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
We have a very interesting guest today.
Yes, I'm so excited to talk to this person.
Me too. So her name is Nadine Macaluso.
And you all may know her as the Duchess from a movie called The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, she was married to Jordan Belfort, who was the infamous stockbroker who was immortalized in The Wolf of Wall Street. And Nadine met and married him and suddenly was thrust into this like unbelievably wealthy life.
Yeah. I mean, I love that movie. So I guess she met him, at least in the movie, on a yacht. And then they bought this estate and he bought her yacht. It was called The Duchess. And it was like so glamorous. And then the movie is about the downfall, right?
So let's talk to her. Yes. Who played her in the movie? The one that just played Barbie.
Margot Robbie.
Yeah. She's so gorgeous.
I mean, just like Nadine, actually.
Yeah, she's gorgeous.
Just stunning.
And she has a new book out. So we'll hear about everything. So hang on. We're going to get Nadine on. Hi, guys.
Hi.
It's Nadine. It's so nice to meet you.
So nice to meet you. My favorite New Jersey Housewives.
Oh, thank you for saying that. Well, Nadine, we are so excited to have you on the show. And first and foremost, we know that you have a new book that's out. And we've been doing our research and it looks, I have not read it yet, but it looks amazing.
It's very exciting. I'm actually in Los Angeles right now. So pardon my background, because I had my book launch party last night.
So exciting.
Congratulations.
So
it's called Run Like Hell. What is it about?
Here it goes.
Ooh, pretty. So
it's
nice.
It's all about trauma bonds. It's all about dysfunctional relationships.
What is that? What is trauma bonds?
A trauma bond is a dysfunctional relationship between two people who are emotionally connected. And so one of the people is usually the abuser or perpetrator or gaslighter. And then the other one is victim to that and doesn't know that they're in it and thinks they're just madly in love, basically.
Sort of relationship also with like a malignant narcissist.
Exactly. Or, exactly. Yeah. 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 So yeah. I lived through that myself.
I'm guessing you're talking about Jordan Belfort. It's just a guess.
Yeah. It's just a guess. Yeah. 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 So I lived through that myself. And, you know, at 39, I went back to school to become
a doctor, right?
Therapist, got my PhD. And I never thought I would go into that sort of expertise around that subject, but I saw so many bright, smart, beautiful women coming into my office and I was like, we have a problem. And so I just went back to the research and wrote the book.
Do you think, we're talking right now about money, which is certainly relevant. And one of the reasons that we wanted to have you on, because clearly you lived with crazy amounts of money. I don't know what happened after you and Jordan separated, but the women that come to you and experience that kind of trauma bonding, do you think that what draws them in a lot of times and what maybe the men use is the money in terms of like, so, and I guess that happened to you.
Yeah.
Tell us a little about your experience.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I was 22 years old. I was modeling in the city and my ex-husband was 28 and uberly successful. Right. A self-made guy. So I really respected that. And I grew up poor in Brooklyn with a single mom. And so, you know, I wanted to have the nicer things in life. And also money represents power. Right. And so it just does, especially in our society. And so we did fall madly in love for sure. I mean, and yet, of course, the money was alluring.
So we were discussing, you know, having all of that money. And I've never had that kind of money.
Well, what kind of money did you have? Like, what did you guys do?
Yeah, so, I mean, so when I first met him, you know, this is how crazy he was. Like, he would send his driver to my house with a Bulgari watch and $15,000 in cash.
When you were first dating?
Yeah,
just,
22.
Just cash?
Yeah, you have to think, just cash, just for the fuck of it. I couldn't even spend it. I'd be running around shopping, buying my mother, like, a stereo, you know, back then. And
stereo, find your mom a stereo. I love
remember it. Stereo.
Right? It was like that movie Brewster's Millions. Do you remember that where he had to spend all the money?
Yes. Right. So I didn't even know. Or, you know, he was so over the top with the love bombing. Right. That's a big part of the love bombing is just spending and spending and, you know, getting me crazy jewelry, taking me to Cartier for a watch. And just the money just seemed endless.
And do you think that was, I know you said you guys were madly in love, but yeah. Experiencing that from where you had come from and all of a sudden to be, you know, to have this glamorous world surrounding you.
Oh,
and
it was,
it
wild.
Must have. Yeah.
I yeah. Would think and so. That's one of the reasons why I put myself in therapy right away at 22, 23, because I was like, I don't know how to manage a staff. You know, I mean, then we moved to Long Island and at 24, I think I lived in a 10,000 square foot house. I had to learn how to decorate it, right? So I went to interior design school because I'm always trying to learn. And, you know, I didn't know how to deal really with any of it. So that's why I went to school and learned. I went to like wine class, interior design school. I went to therapy.
You have that imposter syndrome?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I remember like going on vacation sometimes, even when I was younger, to places like, I don't know, St. Bart's. And I would look around and see all of these beautiful people in their white linen. And, you know, they would have all the yachts. And I was there. I was looking at the same ocean. I was eating the same food. But I would feel like, this is really not me. This is not.
Yeah,
like,
and also just feeling super insecure, right? Yeah, so having not experienced that before and me being a type A personality, you know, wanting to do it right, whatever that meant.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And then, of course, you know, he put it over the edge when he bought a 180-foot yacht.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So you were vacationing on yachts.
Yeah.
You lived in a massive mansion. You had tons of jewelry. Were you
happy?
Was he good to you?
You know, well, that's the thing about a trauma bond is there's something called intermittent abuse or intermittent reinforcement, meaning that you have these extreme experiences of love and love bombing and gifts and adoration, but then you also have extreme experiences of abuse and cruelty and control. So it's the extremity of those two experiences that actually causes the bond.
And did you feel like you had to stay married to him so that you can keep this lifestyle? Were you terrorized by the thought of going back to not having money?
Yeah, for sure. And also, I loved him and we had children right away. And so I really wanted to make it work. But yeah, I mean, that was a big piece of it for sure. For sure. And the fear of, can I make it on my own?
Yeah. Did you feel when you were surrounded by so much, because this is sort of what we've been talking about today, but did you feel happier? Did you feel...
No.
You know, no. Well, that's right. We'll talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, no, I don't think that money makes you happier. I think that, if, you know, coming from not having money and then going into money, I think we've been fed this American dream or this American myth that money is going to make you happier. Now, yes, does it allow us certain freedoms and does it give us certain comforts for sure and access to many things? Mm-hmm. So I would never deny that. But I think happiness is an inside job as a therapist, especially. And I don't think it made me happier. I think actually what it did is it became a trap.
Right. I think that's so interesting. When you and Jordan broke up, were you still wealthy? Or your whole lifestyle changed?
I walked away with nothing. I purposely.
So what happened? So he got, you know, I saw the movie a very long time ago, so I don't really remember, but he got
arrested.
He went to jail. He got arrested. He went to jail, but you didn't file for divorce for a little while after that, right?
No. So what happened was that he got arrested for 11 counts of money laundering. And
you were completely blindsided.
Completely blindsided. Okay. And then like that week I filed for divorce. I told him we're getting divorced because he had an ankle bracelet on and I knew I was safe because he was a very scary person. So I knew like now he's the government's problem. And so the government had us, we gave up $10 million of all of our homes and everything we owned for his bail. I drove $1 million worth of jewelry to the courthouse and said, take it all because I didn't want anything. because it was all blood money.
How, I think that is, first of all, so admirable. I think that, you know, we can talk about a lot of examples of women that would not want to drive their jewelry to the courthouse, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you watch The Housewives, there's,
right. Yeah, yeah, right, right.
Talk
yeah.
about Beverly Hills, but whatever.
Yeah,
but,
that but actually, anyway. Actually out gets me very angry.
What, the Erica Jane earrings situation?
Yeah, because I have a direct experience.
Yeah.
But the blessing that you had enough wherewithal to know that that stuff wasn't bringing you happiness, right? I mean, I think that's how blessed are you? And I'm curious as to when you did get rid of all of that and you couldn't have been, it had been a hard time. You were divorcing your husband and your whole life was changing. But how much of you was affected by the fact that you were no longer a millionaire, a billionaire, whatever?
Yeah, you know, just like everything, it was a paradox. You know, I find that in life as I get older. It felt freeing to give it up because it was such a trap. And then it actually began to mean something terrible to me.
Jackie, you were just saying
I had the same, not to your degree, but I grew up like the first half of my childhood, very middle class. And then my parents made a lot of money. And those were the worst years. They were the worst years. Because I was lonely, I was isolated.
Yeah,
my parents were fighting over the money. Then they ended up, you know, getting shut down by the IRS, and they went to, you know, they had their own issues.
So you had your own trauma around that, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So after you got divorced, did you have the option of fighting for money, or was there nothing left?
I know many people that were in that same case that did go and fight for money. I didn't want that to be my plight in life. I was 31. I had two little kids and I had a maternity company at the time. So I had my own little business that I was kind of relying on. And it just, I was happy to give it up. And
I want to hang out. I'm falling in love as we know. I really am. Forget about that you're gorgeous, but also.
Well, she's married.
I know. What else? But anyway, also. Just hearing this kind of knowledge and this kind of,
perspective,
that inner fortitude. Yeah. And I love that, hearing that with women. And I love that you were, even back then when you were so young, not as swayed by, you know, the money. I love that.
So it's like going from, how quickly did you go from everything to, you didn't go to nothing, right? But you went to like a very
I went to very low. Yeah. I went to like where I was really worrying about money and how I was going to make money. And I did.
Oh, wow.
And then
what was that like? What was that like?
It was super scary. It was super scary because, you know, when I was that wealthy, also I was supporting my whole family. That's like another one of those traps that you get into. And so it wasn't even just
wait, tell us about that, because they asked you to, or you felt like that's what you should do.
I think it was a bit of a combination of both. And so that was like another piece of it too. Like it was a lot. It wasn't just giving up for me. It was like, okay, now I'm not taking care of my parents anymore. And then I had two little kids. So then I was like, okay, I can't take care of my parents. I got to worry about my two little kids because they're 3 and 5. And so for about a year, I had a maternity store in Roslyn, New York, and I had a catalog and a website. So I was working at that. And then as fate would have it, I fell in love on a blind date with a guy like a year and a half later who lives in California. And so then I picked my kids up and I moved to LA to just let us all have a fresh start, because I just didn't want them to live with the legacy. Now, little did I know, my ex was going to write a book and make a movie.
Right.
All right. So tell us about that. So he was in jail for how long? Because I know that there are laws around like moving your kids across the country when the father is in one place.
Yeah. So, you know, but luckily what happens is when your ex is a criminal, the judge
a little more leeway. Yeah.
The judge was like, listen, your homes are getting taken from you. Your husband's a felon. Like you can move. Yeah. He actually just signed the order in 5 minutes. And so I was allowed to move.
But now, in this day and age, and I know obviously you're a doctor and you take care of yourself and you're also married. I don't know anything about your husband, but how attached are you now to things, to money, to wealth?
Well, you know, listen, I still like my nice things. I won't say, I won't like deny that. But as a 56-year-old woman, I'm not that attached to it. I'm much more attached to wisdom and knowledge and having a moral compass and values and health. Again, that doesn't mean that I don't appreciate money now. But you have to remember, like when I grew up, I'm a little older than you guys. You know, it was
I'm 55.
Okay, so it was Pretty Woman, right? It was Wall Street. Greed is good. I mean, we were fed these messages about
we were
gotten older and wiser to know about them. And I'm married for 24 years now. My husband and I, he had 3 children. I had 2. We blended a family and we had a modern day Brady Bunch. And so I picked up and moved to LA to start over.
Right.
I have a whole bunch of questions. Go ahead. What was yours?
We're just all over the place because we have so much to ask you.
And okay, so from you. First question, before we get into anything else, is do you have any contact with Jordan today? How are the kids with him?
Yes, I do. I do have contact with him. My children are 30 and 28. My daughter's a therapist. And, you know, she just got married. She had a baby. So Jordan and I, ironically, actually got along pretty well afterwards.
So you wrote this book?
Listen, my book isn't about him, but he certainly is the inspiration for it. And we've had our struggles a little bit with, you know, me coming a lot on social media and telling my story. But, you know, like I said to him, you wrote a book, you made a movie. Yeah. I also get to tell my narrative.
Nobody likes getting sick. You know your body and you know it's happening. You wake up with a sore throat and low-grade fever. Ugh.
So what are your choices? Get sicker and miss work? Then hope to see a doctor this week or head to an urgent care? Wait 2 hours and sit in a room full of sick people?
Nope, not me. I have a smarter option, my medical emergency kit.
When you get your own medical emergency kit, you just match your symptoms to the doctor-recommended prescription in your kit. No waiting to see the doctor. You get well faster. This is not a first aid kit. It's like having an urgent care in your home.
It includes doctor-prescribed meds to treat over 39 medical issues like COVID, strep throat, pneumonia, all kinds of infections, including UTIs, and many more. Plus a doctor's guide so you'll know exactly which med to take and how.
Every home should have at least one medical emergency kit. You can order yours online in minutes and your kit will be rushed to your door.
And for Jersey J's listeners, we've got a special offer for you. Get 15% off at twc.health/jersey and use promo code Jersey. That's promo code Jersey at twc.health/jersey.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible, cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations questions that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I have a question. So for a very brief period of time in my 20s, I was a divorce lawyer. And one of the things that really, I was at a very high-end Park Avenue divorce firm. And I would have a lot of, we were very female heavy. So a lot of wives coming in, and it would break my heart because you would have these women whose husbands were going on their third or fourth marriage, divorcing them as like their second or third wife. And they were just lost. They didn't know what to do with themselves now. And they were all kind of young and beautiful, but they gave up. They stopped working because they thought this was forever. And now they had no career and they had kids, and now they had no money anymore. And they didn't. And, you know, like the partners would be like, you should look at, you know, getting a new job and getting your resume in order. And they were like, resume? Like, I haven't worked in 10 years and I have little kids. So what's your advice to any woman? I mean, because I know at my age, I see some of my friends' marriages dropping like flies. So like, what's your advice to a woman who's gives up her career to basically marry and raise kids and stay home, and then suddenly they don't want to be broke?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is so common. And thank you for bringing that up. Well, first of all, in a trauma bond, the number one thing that happens is you lose yourself. That is the number one symptom that happens. And so that comes along with a career, even hobbies, even like, what do you authentically want to do? So what I always say, and you're facing your biggest fear for a lot of them will say, that's my cancer, Nadine, to me when I work with them about it. And the only thing you can do is to, you've always been so focused on this other person, is turn the mirror back on you, get really curious about you, and really find out authentically what you want to do. I mean, I went back to school at 39 to become a therapist. So it is never too late to restart your life. That doesn't mean it's not scary. And that doesn't mean that it's not hard, but you certainly can do it.
Nadine, here's a question. Do you watch The Housewives?
Oh my God, I'm obsessed.
Really?
I watch every single one. I do deep dives.
Get out. Really?
Oh yeah.
Really?
Oh wow.
It's my guilty pleasure. I love it.
Okay.
It was feeling about the trend of like some new housewives coming in with like, who are not wealthy, like the Monica on Salt Lake City, or like even some recent New Jersey housewives, or like some, I think like Gina on the OC, who I love, but like, how do you feel about that? Do you think that the housewives should be this fairy tale about money, or should it be
just like everything in life, it's good to have socioeconomic diversity because women can relate to different types of women.
Well, I want to ask you how you think, and this is obviously, there are a lot of housewives, but how you think watching all of the different franchises, how do you think money affects the women? Some of them have more, some of them have less. Do you feel like there's so much vying for attention, and I have this and I have that, and every, you know, it's a the housewives is a microcosm of I feel like, you know, the world we live in. But what do you think is really driving these women when it comes to money?
You mean like their desire to be on the show and like become famous?
Like, what do you think is behind this, like showing off things that you very often don't have?
Oh, yeah.
Or even that you do have, the showing off period, like watching them do that.
I mean, I never understood that really, but I get, you know, I mean, listen, I can only think that a lot of people place their personal value on the things that they have. So if they're wearing a Gucci belt, that means they're a value.
Right.
That's not true. Because everybody's worth love just for being born.
I discuss that in therapy all the time. And not just when it comes to money, right? When it comes to fame, I think a lot of housewives feel like they are, when they are at the top of their game, they're always afraid of losing it, and that causes misery. And then if they're at the bottom of their game and they've been demoted or, you know, even put on pause, that is that affects them. And the truth is, of course, that we're enough when we are at the top of our game and we are on it and we are the most popular housewife, or when we are, you know, the one that's been recently fired. None of it really matters, right? It's living in dignity and living in a place where you know you're enough.
And you can't, you know, this is what I work with all my patients on. You can't get your sense of worth totally from external validation.
Right. And I think so much of that happens on The Housewife.
Yeah. I mean, it's a hard job to be a housewife. My hat's off to you guys. I mean, I could not do that. It takes.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I have these moments of real clarity, especially in the past few months, where ever since everything that happened in Israel, and I'm Israel, my mother's from Israel. So I will have these moments where I'm like, nothing matters to me except being with my children right now. Like, you could take everything from me. The fact that I can sit next to my children while there are, you know, 130 plus people still being held hostage is like, nothing else matters.
You get perspective, I think, unfortunately, sometimes also when bad things happen, right? Like, God forbid someone gets sick. The only thing, I just heard Michael Strahan say that.
Yeah, his daughter has brain cancer.
And he said, everything stopped. Of course, everything stopped. When somebody you love gets sick. But I guess that comes with perspective, right? So all of this stuff at the end of the day
doesn't matter.
Means very little.
Doesn't matter. And that's why I became a therapist, because therapy saved my life. And what I love about therapy is you can't really get perspective unless you're reflective. Right. If you don't pause and think about, like, really what is important, what is making me happy, and taking that time to do that is what gives us perspective.
And it's the only thing, right? Like all this other stuff, right? And all this other, these feelings of grandiosity that I think we fall victim to as people that have been on TV, it always fades and you're always left with, you know, you and being happy with who you are outside of money.
That's
outside
of
any kind of fame.
So how are you now? Are you comfortable again? Do you ever wish that you could go back to some of that grand lifestyle, or are you completely content?
I'm content. I mean, listen, would it be fun to go on a yacht maybe for a weekend? Sure. But content. You know, my daughter just gave birth and we have a 6 month.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. And we just spent like a quiet, simple Christmas in Boca with family, and it's calm and there's no drama. And, you know, I've worked hard to have that life.
You know,
that emotional richness, right? That emotional intelligence.
And all of that, I know I'm repeating myself, but all of that stuff that you had, and it didn't fill you up. And like, right? It's just, I wish that, you know, everybody, we could all agree that all this stuff is so unnecessary, but I still work on my own desire.
Can I ask you another question? Just your thoughts on this. I read an article in the New York Post last week about this new trend of the stay-at-home girlfriend. Have you heard about this?
No, please tell
me. It's about women choosing to slow down their, what was the exact words they used, was they're choosing a softer life than the go-getter girl boss life. It's like they're getting rid of the girl boss and they just want to go stay home, take care of their boyfriend and take care of themselves so they could be their best self for their boyfriend. But in the meantime, they are not, they don't, there's no emphasis on marriage. So there's no promise of financial security for you trading your career and your, you know, your future for the comfort of this person. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean,
that's the antithesis of who you are. So
yeah, I mean,
that sounds good.
Like they want to slow down and not buy into the whole girl boss thing, which I can see that gets competitive too. That's nonsense, girl boss shit.
Yeah, I can understand that, wanting a slower, softer, easier life. However, I do think you run into trouble when you get very focused on just your partner. And again, you can lose yourself in them. I think it's very important, especially as a woman, because we've been taught to be so relational, which is beautiful. But it's very important to still stay very connected to yourself. Like, that's what I work on with my women. How do you stay connected in your own power, in your own authenticity to yourself, and still stay connected to another, right? That's the balance.
And you know what, I don't think that it's black or white. You don't have to be a girl boss.
No.
But saying that, you know, the new way is to simply take care of someone else. And again, without marriage or any kind of, if you're going to give up everything and that's the way you want to live, is just to, you know, make someone else happy that makes you happy. Well, you better be careful.
Yeah.
Because there's potential that it might not work out.
Yeah.
And then what?
Question for you.
Why do you think I personally signed a prenup with Evan? Because I came into the marriage with a lot of my parents' money, which I don't spend my parents' money at all, but I had to protect that out of respect for them. And he had absolutely no issue signing a prenup. He's in finance. He's made his own money.
Right.
But I feel like prenups get such a bad rap. And I think that they're so, like, there's nothing wrong with them. They're not
I agree with you. I think they're so important because marriage is a legal commitment, as we know.
Why are people so against them? Like, what is the bad rap with them?
It's because it's like that fairy tale love thing, you know, but we know people fall out of love. We know we're living much longer. We know change is inevitable.
No, I would not have signed one, I don't think. And I'll tell you, because it's not about romanticizing marriage. What percentage is there? More than half marriages end in divorce.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. But I think honestly, because of my own security and knowing that, you know, we were going to enter into this partnership and I was going to be home taking care of the kids and raising them. And Jeff was going to be bringing in, you know, the money. And so what would that look like at the end of the marriage?
So protect you. And this is the problem. I think that people think that a prenup is going to automatically work against the woman, but I think that you can actually make it work in your favor.
You can set up.
Because if you leave it to the courts, different states have different rules on how much you're going to get.
If you're going
to
do.
Yes, that's true. But have you ever known a woman to sign a prenup because she thought it would help her out in the end? I only know women that would sign a prenup because the man would demand that she sign the prenup.
Yeah, but I think that's the misconception.
Do you, Nadine, do you know women that have signed prenups because they wanted to?
No, but I think what Jackie's talking about is, I think, actually an interesting new way to look at prenups where it can protect both parties.
You know, I love that.
Parties came in and like really decided, like mindfully and intentionally, this is, if we did break up, this is how we would do it. So I think
traditionally, I don't think that's been.
Traditionally, it has not been like that. Like in my second marriage, I don't have a prenup. But, you know, I came with nothing. So he didn't worry about that. You know, but the thing about one of the reasons why I wrote my book too is that I love this conversation is that education is what empowers us. So having these conversations and talking about different concepts, right? And then we get to choose.
Yeah, that's right.
And we get to choose.
Yeah. Well, listen, after the show is over, I'll meet you for dinner at what time? Because I'm obsessed. So
I'm going to New York next week.
Please, let's get together. Really? Yeah. We would love to stay in touch with you. You're amazing.
I'm going to do Good Morning America and NBC. So to promote my book.
Amazing.
It was such a pleasure meeting you. And honestly, I love your perspective.
Thank you so much. I love
thank you.
Girls.
So
I love watching you. Thank you for entertaining me.
Thank you, Nadine.
Bye.
She was amazing.
Amazing. Yeah, I loved her. And I
was so taken with the fact that she was not so taken with the money. I mean, to go from, you know, being poor and then thrust into a world of glamour and luxury and still drive all your stuff right to the courthouse.
God, I can't imagine how hard that is.
Good for her. I don't think it sounded like it was that hard. I think she's very grounded. I mean, and I think that a lot of people are not. When you get, you know, when you become that wealthy, you lose perspective.
Yeah.
That's why I think I really just liked her.
Well, I think that the money didn't bring her happiness. And when she saw that, it made it easier to give up.
A lot of unhappy people that have money, they'll still cling to it.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah. And listen, here's the truth of it. I'm not above any of that. I don't have what some people have, and I have more than other people have. But guess what? I think that if my lifestyle was about to change, I hope that I would be okay with that and be strong enough and say, I'm not happy because I have a 5-bedroom colonial in Versado River. I could be happy in, you know, with much less.
Yeah. Well, you know what? She also has Margot Robbie played her in a movie. So, yeah. If there was a movie about me and Margot Robbie playing me, I can die happily.
Yeah, well.
You know, because that means that I'm pretty fucking gorgeous.
So, you're pretty fucking gorgeous.
Aw.
This was so good.
It was really.
I loved hearing your like upbringing story. I didn't know that about your dad.
Really?
That's wild. Yeah, one of the divorce clients that I had lived in that same Trump building.
Oh, in Trump Tower.
Oh my God.
So I moved to New York City after college and I was in acting school. And at the time he had moved to Dallas. So he had like 6 months left on his lease. So I moved in. I lived in Trump Tower and I would have these like parties and the doormen were like, what the fuck? It would be like, you know, kids coming in, driving their bicycles, parking their bikes and bringing up like whatever, booze and paper bags.
That's another great example of being
there at that time, I think made me feel fed into this feeling that I was somehow special. You know, meanwhile, I was at that time in my life, like it fed into that. And yet at the same time, I was not happy at that point in my life. I was struggling with an eating disorder and feeling less than in so many different areas of my life, you know, and not feeling good about myself, not feeling attractive, not feeling like I really knew what I wanted to do with my life. But that fed into that part of me, you know, that is attached to money. I have this apartment I'm just as good as, I'm better than,
mm-hmm.
meanwhile I was miserable.
Aww, I'm so glad that you found yourself.
Thank you. Not completely. We're still searching.
Happy and thriving. Never too late. All right, guys.
Well, we are so happy that you tuned in and leave us 5 stars if you love us.
Or don't. We just appreciate it.
No, don't tell them not to. Leave us for fucking 5 stars. Do it. It's easy. All right. So until next time, guys.
Thank you so much.
We are two Jersey Kitties and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Hey, guys. This is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us.
He was trying to brand us. So we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
Join my host as they unravel the story of the largest and most shocking organization in the history of the troubled teen industry. Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.